contacted our office and said, hey, I want to put a geocache out there at the lake. And I said, well, what's that? And he described it to me, and I thought, well, okay, let's see what we can do here. And
he actually had one out there near our visitor center. Was talking with him, and he wanted to set out a couple caches, and we wrote him out a permit, and he set the caches out. A couple weeks later, he calls us. Hey, he says, I was wanting to get a couple people together and maybe have a geocaching day. Sounds like fun. I said, I don't know much about it at that time. What do you need from us? And he says, I need to be able to set out some more caches, and if I can meet at one of your rec areas. And so I said, okay, we can arrange that. In fact, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you a shelter house over at Spalding. So him and another friend of his went out, and they set out 6 or 7 caches, and I set up a couple of them just because at that time I had kind of took an interest and got on geocaching.com and seen what it was all about. And in May, we had probably about 25 to 30 people come up just to spend a day caching. We spent about 2 hours, maybe 3 hours that morning, just talking and visiting, seeing what it was about. Got really excited.
You hung out there too.
Oh, yeah. I
came and arranged it, and then you also were part of the...
Yeah, I just came in and just... I was working that day to see if I could lend any hand. And really, it was kind of a self... supporting type of thing. They met, ate a little food. They all decided they're going to go geocaching and find these caches. In that visit, I can remember Mike Griffin was kind of talking about a Moga. He kept saying Moga. This would be a great place for a Moga. And I had no idea what he was talking about. So if y'all want to do something in the future, give me a holler. I'd be more than happy to try to see what I can accommodate. Well, about 2 months later, we got a hold of each other. And Mike says, hey, I want to do a Moga up there. Okay, explain to me what a Moga is, I told him. And he told me what it was. And I said, tell you what I'll do. Got a great area. It's called Indian Creek Recreation Area. 2,100 acres of land. Pretty good facilities over there. I think it would accommodate you very well. It's a self-contained recreation area. He says, well, let's roll forward and see what we can come up with. Starting to talk with Chamber of Commerce. Hey, let's get you all involved because this has potential to draw in quite a few people from the outside. They got involved. Mike came up in November. It was his first look at Indian Creek Recreation Area. My impression was he really liked the area because of how it laid. Plethora of places to hide. On that day, after we looked at the area, we committed to it, and here we are.
Did you have to do any convincing to other people we're going to do this? I mean, is it some type of clearance?
The only thing I had to do is because it's outside of our normal recreation area, these areas are normally closed, and they take about a week to get fired up. And what we're going to have to do in Indian Creek's case is start about a week earlier, getting their things watered up, getting all the power checked out, and getting things clean. I had a great support from the administrative staff here at the lake. My two bosses, they jumped on and thought this was great. And the people that I work with, I have a gentleman that takes care of the facilities. His main job is to manage the campgrounds and the boat ramps. I said, this is what needs to happen. Can we accommodate it? And he was like, yeah, let's do it. Have lots of people coming in on an off season. We got support of the local businesses and our support, and there was really no point of contention. I wanted to do something a little bit special. If people were coming to participate, I said, let's try to get them half price camping. And we normally charge $12, $16 for a campsite. And I said, let's see if we can knock it in half. That way people aren't scared about staying in the campground. And that worked out great. So, and everything just kind of fell in line. And like I said, it's another form of recreation that is not prevalent around here, but it's low impact. It's a family oriented thing. You can make it as challenging or as easy as you want. And that's the fascinating thing about geocaching.
You say you involved the Chamber of Commerce in some way?
It's a rural community. Technology is slow to trickle into these rural communities. Told them what geocaching was. They didn't quite understand it, nor could they grasp the concept that there was thousands of people in the country doing this. They didn't understand the potential of its draw to this area. And when I said, well, there's a special event coming up. It's going to be in March. It's off-season for us. It's off-season for you. The potential of having X number of people visiting the area that would normally not be here is great. They embraced it, but they still didn't quite understand, was it a competition or was it like a fishing tournament? And I said, it's kind of like a fishing tournament. People are going to show up and they're competing. They're finding little, hidden little treasure boxes. Oh, okay, they'd say, yeah. And I'm hoping that they'll understand that with these caches in place, after the event's over with, that's another draw for people to come in. It may be that individual that just is coming up for a day trip to Mark Twain Lake, to come to Indian Creek, and to see how many of those 60 caches they can find in a day. He may only be stopping and running into the gas station to put $20, $30 of gas, and he may only stop by the Hardee's in Monroe City to buy him a hamburger for his family, but that's 50 to $60 potentially that wasn't in the economy prior
to
this
being
there.
And if they're a geocacher, they're going to find some place to do it. So either you take the money or somebody else.
Well, and it's not even. I wish it wouldn't all revolve around the economics, but for the chamber to understand it, and that's what their purpose in life is.
And like you're saying, there's a longer lasting effect. There's going to be an event, but the result of that is there are going to be permanent caches here. You purchase the ammo boxes, and you're willing to maintain it.
Corps of Engineers is sponsoring this by providing an area. And I knew that there would be a financial burden on your all's organization for providing these cash boxes, knowing that they were between $8 and $10 a piece. So I found an outlet, justified it, and was able to purchase 100 of them. I'm just going to give them to Brawny Bear Mike Griffin and say, paint them up, do what you're going to do, and we'll go out and hide them with this clause. You got to leave them in place. You got to leave him out there in Indian Creek so people can find him. And he's like, yeah, that's all right. Yeah. We can do that. Yeah, we're all over that. Yeah, I mean, he's agreed to it, and it's going to work out great because there's so many places here in these woods that you can hide these caches, and you're never going to bump into somebody. It's a year-round thing, even during the hunting seasons. You can come into this area because it's no hunting area and still cache and probably still not find them all. You know, 60 caches during a weekend would be a tough find.
Do you think that because you're going to be supporting caches that they'll be more of an education of the people around, so if the hunter's hunting or a fisherman's fishing and they run into one of these, they don't panic and say, I found an ammo box in the woods. I blew it up for you.
Yeah, I have not had, I don't know what they call them, muggles. We've not had that incident here where a hunter's bumped into one of the caches. And that'll take a while to educate people. Like I said, this is a new form of recreation. Not a lot of people are aware of it. Somebody's going to call me, I know, in the next year or two and say, hey, I bumped into an ammo can sitting underneath a rock down here at such and such place. What's that all about? And then I'm going to explain it to them. We are doing an advertisement of this on our website. We're also went through the local media outlets, tried to explain the whole recreation concept of this, but we're still going to have the questions. And you know, I've introduced some friends of ours in the church. This is what it's about. And we've took them out and put, you know, a GPS in their children's hands and say, let them follow the arrow. We'd get within a quarter mile of one or something, and they would find it. Just to introduce them to the sport. And so let's just get your family out and enjoying the outdoors, and it don't cost you a lot. It costs you some gas and $100 worth of GPS. Now, I took a bunch of women out with the Turkey Federation. We went out and found a geocache. I took them out with the GPS units. We started about a quarter mile away from the cache. I started them in different locations, and I said, go find it. I turned their GPSs on, programmed them in, and off they went. You know, half hour later, they were sitting on top of the cache, and they just thought it was cool. It was all get out. And they come back, and I don't know if they stuck with it, but they just thought it was neat to find that one particular cache. And hopefully they got introduced to the sport, and we'll see what happens.
You have your own unit. Do you see in the future that maybe there would be geocaching classes, and you will have a number of them that maybe they can rent for the day if they come up here?
Not so much here, no. I don't think so. I'd see the potential this summer, starting with campfire programs, educating the public that are using our facilities or in this recreation. I can see me sitting at this amphitheater up there, putting on a PowerPoint presentation and describing geocaching at Mark Twain Lake and talking about it here and then saying, guess what? It's all over the country. You can go to St. Louis. You can go to find that there's 25 caches in Hannibal, Missouri, hidden all over the place on the public lands. I don't anticipate us buying a bunch to rent out.
That's not in the budget anytime
soon. No, that's not in the budget.
Are there places, though, around here where there are not going to be caches based on for safety reasons or legal reasons?
We're not going to put them in the campgrounds themselves, in the immediate campgrounds. We don't want to mix use. There are people that may have no idea that geocache is there. They're there to camp. They're there to enjoy the quiet. And all of a sudden, here comes a couple guys with GPS units there, stomping through the woods behind their campsite. So they're not going to be in the immediate campgrounds. We're not going to put them out near the boat ramps because there's so much traffic in and around. If somebody were to pull down there in a car and park and get out and start looking for a cache, they may leave their vehicle in a place that may get hit. Other than that, everything's fair game.
See, there's actually caches here already that have been placed and approved by the Army Corps of Engineers.
Yeah, we'll say there's 12 caches on the lake that have been put out by other cachers. And they're headed around the lake. And I, myself, have put out about 6. So I'm going to say there's around 18 caches at Mark Twain Lake.
And how have you published them? Under what geocaching name are you using?
If you see Forrester out, I'm the one who's hid.
Not the one that's on the island, though.
No, I didn't
find
that.
There is one on the island.
There's an island one. And you know what? When I was at that May event, a lot of the Slogger members came up to at Spalding. They were saying, we need to put one out on an island somewhere. I said, well, I'll see what I can accommodate. Well, just about the time I was thinking about putting one out there, an old boy come in and says, I want to put one out there. I said, knock yourself out. And so he called it Spider Island. And I asked him, I said, why'd you call it Spider Island? He had some reason. See, and there's so many crafty names on those caches. I need to be more creative with mine because I've got some. Like, I got one that's out near one of our brood ponds. We re-raise largemouth bass. We were asking if we stockfish. We do a little bit of it. We usually raise around 15,000 to 18,000 largemouth bass every year, and we dump them into the lake. Well, I put a cache out near this brood pond, so I named that cache Rockabye Bassy. And then we got one near a field that we manage for doves, migratory birds. We put a lot of sunflowers and millets out there, and so we called it the Dove Diner. You know, I'm sure that there's a particular reason, and once you go find a cache, you'll understand. The one that got me, this Aquila, Lady Hawk, and this Eric East, I can't remember his name, Believer, they stuck one out that was Say Ah. When I read that title, I said, say, ah. I was assuming it was a scenic overlook.
Ah.
But it's not. And I kept looking. Every time I would be with the GPS, and we'd be, and this trail would wind like this. And every time I'd come to a near an outlook, I'm going, it's up here. It's got to be up here. I'd get to the outlook, and the GPS unit would say, you're still 500 feet away. Bang, where's that? Finally, when I got within 30 foot of the cache, I realized where the name came from. I'm not going to tell you. Because you'll figure it out if you ever go look
for
it.
Once I'm there,
once you're there. But it's not a scenic view. It, not by any means.
Is there any time of the year that I can't come out here and find those caches?
No.
Even the 60-plus ones?
No.
When they're out there? I can come in any
time
of the year?
The only two, there's two weekends a year in Indian Creek you will not be able to hunt a cache. The second weekend of the turkey hunt, because I have a special hunt for turkeys by disabled people in the spring, and in the fall I have a special event hunt for disabled people for deer. Those two weekends would be pretty much off limits to caching. You know, there's 50 more weekends a year you can be out here then.
And even though some of the entrance ways are closed by a gate, you can still park in front of the gate and walk your way in?
Park off to the edge of the road by the gate and walk yourself in to go find your cache, if you can find it. Our hometown's Chester, Illinois. South St. Louis, about 70 miles. And we went home for Labor Day weekend. And on the way down, we looked up on geocaching.com for a couple sites down there. A couple of them were hard. A couple of them you had to go to the library, do some research, do an algebra formula, and figure this. But there was one down near the bridge that crosses Mississippi River. I am what I am. It's by the Popeye statue. We were going to go home to visit our parents, see if we can find that critter. The clue was, short people will see it first. Well, there was truth in that, because my 8-year-old daughter, what's this? And she pulled out of a bush something about the size of a tube of chapstick. Those are ornery.
Well, I appreciate you not only supporting us, but being as involved and enthusiastic as you are about geocaching. Looking forward to seeing how MOGA 2007 comes out.
I'm looking forward to it. So is my family.
Oh, thanks a lot for your time.
No problem.
I've took a very big personal interest just because I have found this extremely enjoyable, but I've got to be able to temper it while I'm doing my essential mission.
Right, your real job.
Yeah, if I'm out here, I got personnel out here, and there's an issue with a cache, like one of the ones I got hit, yeah, I'll tell them to stop by and look at. The ones I've placed out here have been on my own fruition and on my own time. I mean, I got support of the bosses. I could probably go out there on the job and do it. And then,
well, I guess if you're walking around looking for things and you just happen to be in the area.
Yeah, right.
Pick up on it, whatever.
Right. And a lot of mine are pretty remote, so it takes a little bit of getting into. What's neat for me is when we travel down home, we'll stop one cache on the way home. On the way down, 61, get down, and we may make one stop. And we'll just make sure that stops near a cache. I'm looking forward to this. I mean, it's going to be neat out here. And that day that event occurs, I'm here in the official capacity, but I've been trying to talk to my wife. I'm like, yeah, we don't try to sign up for that 2-person event. We can do it. And she's going, no, we fight too much when we're doing this cache anyway. I've been introduced to a phenomenon called cracker barreling. Yeah, that's their big thing.
Okay.
We call them potlucks. Y'all call them cracker barrelings. Mm-hmm. It was amazing to me at that thing in May. I just brought in 40 or so hamburger patties. we had off a cow butcher. I just brought them just in case there wasn't nothing to eat. By the time it was over, there was a feast. And I was like, man, you guys know how to potluck. And they were like, Cracker Barrel, whatever you want to call it, I'm eating.
Right.
There was people from like Tuscaloosa, Alabama. There was quite a few, and we've got phone calls from people from Indiana. So. One guy called, he was from Kentucky or Tennessee. He called me up, talked to me for about 10 minutes. Wanted me to send him an aerial photo of Indian Creek. Says, why do you need an aerial photo? He goes, I just want to get a lay of the land for next spring. And I said, all right, sure, I can send you a digital orthoclock. Be more than happy to. He'll be out here all that weekend. I suspect starting Friday night at about 5, I'll be sitting up in the feed booth getting people registered for camp. And once that's done, I'll mingle around, see how visit people, and I'll just pretty much camp out here that weekend. Like I said, this is all season. There's nobody here. You guys are the show.
We got to run out of the woods.
You're going to have to run. Put this together very, very well. So I think it's going to go off with limited to no hitches. If you're going to go cache, there's lots of caches in and around the dam.
Yeah, I'm probably going to end up staying the night and then cache tomorrow as well. So any place you recommend to stay?
There are three places in Monroe City, three hotels, right in the main part town. Mm-hmm. They're all about the same. There's a good Mexican restaurant in town. I don't know if you're into Mexican food. It's called Dos Primos. Once you get in Monroe City, you ain't going to miss anything.
Okay.
One big main road. There's a north-south road that runs on the west side of town that you're going to come into on 24. If you instead of turning on W, if you go straight, it takes you straight into town.
Okay.
Gets you to the main intersection, then you turn right, and it takes you down the main drag of town, and that's where all the hotels are at. A Pizza Hut, and there's a Chinese place out there, which is good, Chinese buffet.
It looks like MOGA 2007 is going to be a fun event. We sure appreciate the support of the Army Corps of Engineers. Hope to see you at the event in March. We'll have a few video cameras floating around during the event, capturing the activities and looking for on-camera interviews.
This concludes the SLOGA podcast. For more information about the SLOGA group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.